B-Pod Studios.
Group Station. Sports Hub Headlines.
Bruins lost to Carolina last night in Raleigh, and it was a combination of facing a hot team and some bad luck.
Carolina drives the puck over the line left side. Niederreiter sent it across, deflected, they score! That pass was not intended where it ended up.
That's Judd Surratt here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. That deflection was part of a 3-0 Bruins loss. Frederick Anderson, 33 saves for the Hurricanes. They're now 6-0. Bruins back home to play Florida at TD Garden tomorrow night. The Panthers just beat the Bruins Wednesday night, but they will come to town with a new head coach. Joel Quenneville resigned yesterday after meeting with the commissioner. Quenneville was the head coach in Chicago in 2010 and apparently had knowledge of a sexual assault of one of his players by a video coach and failed to take action. Patriots once again had everyone at practice yesterday. They're in L.A. to play the Chargers on Sunday. Like on Wednesday, 15 players were limited, including Kendrick Bourne and Dante Hightower, among others. Last night, Green Bay beat Arizona 24-21. Kyler Murray intercepted in the end zone with 12 seconds left to end it. Red Sox outfielder Hunter Renfroe has been voted a finalist for an American League Gold Glove. And Game 3 of the World Series is tonight in Atlanta, with the Braves in Houston even at a game apiece. Sports Hub headlines are brought to you by the 99 Restaurants. Visit the Nines every Sunday for Football Frenzy. Enjoy great dine-in deals like $5.99 full-size appetizer and 59-cent bone-in wings and your chance to win game tickets. The 99, always the real deal. I'm John Wallach of Austin's Home for Sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Your next update at 7:30.
It's a sports thing. Boston is known for that type of stuff.
And get in the game.
That's why they hate us, because they ain't us.
Toucher and Rich.
No, I don't want to kill anybody.
Mornings on 98.5, The Sports Hub. This is the home of the Bruins and the Celtics.
It is nothing but a thrill a minute.
And these guys.
Oh, my Lord, what could come next?
Toucher and Rich on Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Touch and Rich radio program. You can watch us on Twitch at twitch.tv or the Twitch app. Follow 98.5 The Sports Hub. Watch us. You get to see Bert Breer. And that's cool. Bert Breer is the senior NFL reporter and lead content strategist for the MMQB. Getting down to business with Bert Breer is brought to you by Bentley University, a force for business, a force for good. Learn more at bentley.edu. Now, Bert, Rich had an article, I think on Monday, from the MMQB, not you, but a gentleman at the MMQB who had taken Mike Tomlin, the question of Mike Tomlin taking the USC job.
Yeah.
And really broken it down into just how incredibly racist it was that he asked that.
Yeah, I didn't write that. I even said, I will say this. I defended you when I read this. I said,
right out of the way of that train.
I said, nope. Even Bert's probably looking at this article and going, what are you doing?
I mean, like, the whole thing with that, and people got so upset about it. And it's like, no one said that you were considering the job. And I understand, like, this stuff turns into a game of telephone, right? Like, And trust me, I've been working in it for long enough. Football is like middle school, the way the word just passes through. So It's, you know, I'm sure by the time it got to Tomlin, it was like, oh, are you really interested in the job? You know what
I mean? Well, Carson Palmer was on Dan Patrick and said that they were looking at him for the job. I mean, he said
it. I mean, look, I personally think the Raiders are going to sniff around on Mike Tomlin. Why? Because he's been there for 15 years. So he's now been there as long as Bill Cowher was there. On top of that, they may not have a quarterback next year.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you are USC or you are the Raiders or you are any big-time college football program or you're an NFL team, and you think, like, how can we think outside the box? How
right.
can we think of, like, candidates that aren't just on these lists that you see every year? I think it's actually smart. Like, why not ask?
Well, right? But the way it was implied at the end, or the way that the guy who writes for the MMQB, and I don't know what his name
is. Yeah, no, I think it was Mike Rosenberg.
It was Mike Rosenberg.
I like Mike, but
you know, Bert sucks up all the money in MMQB, and kids don't want to get into journalism anymore.
I just don't think, I mean, I understand what Mike was, what Mike Tomlin was saying. Okay.
Well, Tomlin, because the way he ended, for the people who didn't hear it, he goes, why is nobody asking Sean Payton this? Why is nobody asking Bruce Arians this? And I thought...
Andy Reid.
I'm sorry, not Bruce Arians. And I thought that was because he named two of his contemporaries, two people who had won the same amount of Super Bowls that he had.
Right.
And that
Sean
was...
Sean Payton had been asked about the Michigan job the year that Harbaugh got it. Jim Harbaugh, who had been to a Super Bowl with the Niners, was constantly asked about college jobs.
He was asked about USC this week, as a matter of fact. So right. This is one of those
John
things.
John Gruden was speculated for Texas.
Notre Dame.
Tennessee. So, like, I understand, like, and I think, like, the one great thing that Tomlin did was show everybody, if you want to shut down speculation, that's how you do it.
Yeah, sure.
Right? Like that is the best job a coach can possibly do.
I know they say never, but never say never, yeah. But never.
I mean, it may be impossible for a guy like that to shut down speculation completely, mm-hmm. but if you want to shut down speculation, like, do what Tomlin did. That's the best a coach can do in that situation. But there are a handful of college jobs that are as good as NFL jobs. And really it boils down to, what do you value?
Not as good as the Steelers job, though.
Maybe not as good as the Steelers job.
That might be the best job in professional sports.
USC's a good job.
Bert, I have said, to much consternation of people, that USC, and including Wallach, that USC is a... They shouldn't settle for anything.
It's a better job than a lot of NFL jobs.
It's a better job than LSU. USC has been the best program in the nation. You're in Los Angeles. I mean,
we were talking about how you have an easier path to winning.
I mean, you can probably recruit almost exclusively
in California
within an hour of campus.
Exactly.
Right? Like, and yeah. still get a team that can compete with anybody.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, like, so I think there are a handful of college jobs, and again, it's like Alabama, Ohio State, Texas, USC that are competitive with NFL jobs and can compete financially with NFL jobs too, as far as what they can offer you.
Well, yeah.
And then it really boils down to, what do you want, right? Like, do you want to compete at the highest level? Do you want to not have to deal with recruiting, which is that's the benefit of the NFL. Benefit of college, you have a ton of power. You can build a roster the way you want because you're not drafting, you're recruiting. Like, yeah. So,
plus, you don't have to work as hard. I mean, just look at Spurrier.
Right.
I mean, you don't have to work as
well.
Hard.
You do. There's a difference, though. It's the NFL. You probably have to work more hours, but in college now, the way recruiting works, you're sort of always. You may not always be working, but you're always on the clock.
But if I'm the coach at USC, I mean, I'm sealing the deal on how many kids a year. I mean, like, how many kids a year am I face to facing with? I mean, unless I'm at USC, unless you're a 5-star kid. Or a big 4-star kid. But you mentioned the Texas job. The Texas job is fascinating to me because you want to talk about recruiting.
I mean, Austin.
They could recruit within, like, the high schools around. Like, they just, like, walk to the high schools around there and they can't win. I mean, every kid at those Texas high schools wants to go to Texas. And is there a better recruiting spot than Texas for football? And they can't win. So that's funny to me.
I do find it interesting that you mentioned that the Raiders might go after Mike Tomlin. Other than money, why would he leave? Because they don't have a good quarterback situation. I mean, Derek Carr is not like the savior.
It's a lot better than what the Steelers are looking at right now.
Yeah, but you're also with a company that has, you know, basically loved you this long. They're one of the best owners in sports.
I totally agree. Like, it is there are a couple jobs that I think are sort of considered a cut above. And I think the Giants has always been seen that way. Maybe it's lost its luster a little bit the last couple
Judge
of years.
Gets fired,
because they've turned it over so many times the last few years. But but like when Coughlin was still there, like I still remember, like, okay, like whenever Coughlin's out here, like that's like a brass ring job, right? So, I mean, Packers, Cowboys, Steelers, Giants, like there are a few of these jobs that are sort of on a different level.
Yeah, and I just, I think it's smart to go after him. But I mean, knowing that Mark Davis threw $100 million at John Gruden, what do you think he's going to pay for Mike Tomlin?
I just think it would be funny.
Maybe the same contract.
Going from the Rooneys to Davis.
I also think. Do you guys like the, I kind of like the vinyl jacket backpack combo.
It's my Halloween costume. So you were there, because am I wrong that you were at the thing?
Yeah.
Because I saw pictures of you interviewing.
Right.
Now, what's obviously the stuff he talked about was extremely serious, and we'll get to that in a moment. But I mean, then I saw the picture of what he was wearing when he was saying it. And Mark Davis just gives zero Fs, correct? Like, he's one of these guys that doesn't, he's about as outside of the old boys club as you could possibly get.
I actually respect the way that he's sort of, I think over the last 4 or 5 years, like, we've seen a little bit of a turn with him where he's becoming more like his dad.
I agree.
You know, like, where it was, like, kind of the doofus who's trying to get in the club and trying to fit in with everybody. And now it's more like they've screwed him a couple times.
They've screwed him twice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't trust these MFers, and I don't need to kiss their ass anymore either.
Right. Right. So, Bert, and then we're not going to be able to get to your answer, but there's two things that came out of the owners' meetings. Obviously, one is the situation with the emails and the situation with the Washington football team, and two is the Kroenke stuff where he's screwing over all the owners. And so if you're Mark Davis, they screwed you
on L.A. Where, by the way, you were the most popular. Like, the reason the Rams didn't want you there is because they knew if you go with the Rams, the Rams are now number two. Because, like, the way it is now, like, the Rams are the Lakers and the Chargers are the Clippers.
Yeah.
If the Raiders go to L.A., the Raiders are the Lakers, and you are the Clippers.
Right, so I'm sitting there. I have this whole situation in Carmel set up. I mean, it's all good to go, and you screw me on that. And why do you screw me on that? You side with a guy who's now got you paying, you know, tens of millions of dollars in legal fees.
Got a nice
fees.
Stadium out of it, though.
Well, yeah, great. Well, so did Davis. And so you screw me out of that, and then you turn around and you have this situation with the Washington football team, and out of the blue, you just decide to screw me out of that, too. Like, I'm the, so
he actually, you know what the interesting thing is? In their privileged meeting, owners only, like, I've got, like, details on this and everything, he confronted Goodell. And basically, I mean, like, they had, like, a contentious moment in front of everybody where, like, basically Mark Davis said, like, you got to tell me when you had these emails.
Yeah.
And Roger was, we had them in June. Why did I not get these emails in June? Like, you flagged these emails. We're supposed to be working together. You're supposed to be working for me. Why did I not see these emails in June? I'm not saying, like, that what I'm not defending John Gruden and what he did was, I'm not saying what he did was right.
We had to make a move before mid-season.
Why am I being put in this position in October? And I agree with him on that.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah.
And I mean, like, and I think his point was, you wouldn't do this to John Mara.
Well, they're protecting.
You wouldn't do this to Art Rooney.
They won't do it to Snyder. They're protecting Snyder, and I have to believe, because they believe he's litigious, and that
they're scared of him.
They're afraid of him because he's such a creep.
Because he doesn't care.
And they shouldn't have let him be an owner anyway. And so they made the mistake of letting him be the owner, and so they're picking on Mark Davis because this is,
because it's easy to pick on him.
Right, and he's not going to be, he's not as litigious, and he's not going to be a thorn in the side.
He also was one of the few guys that called out Roger Goodell after, I mean, Jerry Jones had a quote, and he thought that the whole investigation
was very satisfied.
Yeah, very satisfied with the investigation.
10 minutes later, he comes in and says, I want the report. We need to look into this.
And Mark Davis says, no, there's victims here. This needs to be released for their sake.
Well, if I'm Mark Davis, I'm never letting that go, because you screwed me.
I mean, it's totally what his dad was. 100%.
And it's been great. Like, it's so funny you say that, because over the last, like, couple of years, I've looked at Mark Davis a little bit different as well.
Well, I just want to know what it's like when he says something like that to Catherine Mano and then gets into the owner's meeting. You know, I mean, he's got to find a way where they can't push him around anymore. All right, Bert Breer's here. We'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Get out of here. Come on. Don't listen to them. Listen to no one.
Don't listen to them. You're going to ruin your career.
Richard Rich.
You can't listen to those people. They're maniacs.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hey, everybody. We are Touch Your Rich, how do you do? How you have fun today?
Where's that music from?
This right here? Is this the Strokes?
Sounds like the Strokes.
Okay.
Kings of Leon.
Oh, okay.
See, they have the tone of the Strokes. It's all about the tone, man. Mm-hmm. Just give me an Ibanez and some Carvel.
Let's try to make you sound less wealthy than you are. We might be multimillionaire musicians, but let's make our instruments sound like they're crap. Just so people think we're from the dirt. That's one thing I always had a problem with the Strokes, is that they tried to be like, we're from the streets. Dude, your dad was head of the Casablancas modeling agency.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Like, the Strokes drive me crazy. They're an okay band, but they're posers. Total and complete posers.
Well, but they were the band in New York.
Yeah, because they all dressed the part because their dad was the head of a modeling agency.
But nonetheless, they were the band in New York. Like, they were like the biggest band in that scene, and they existed in that scene,
mm-hmm.
and they were the biggest.
And they were all wealthy kids. Their music was fine, and they were posers. But their music was all right, but they were posers.
But what were they posing as?
They were posing as they went through the rock and roll car wash. Their dad bought them all the right clothes. They made them like, look like these, you know, they gave them the look.
None of them came from other bands
that, you know, had. They didn't cut their teeth, put it that way.
First of all, they came up with that look. And second of all,
they all grew up in fashion, so sure.
So, fine, regardless, but they did come up with that look.
The Rolling Stones came up with that look.
And they were the band, Like, you can say what you want, but they were playing the clubs in New York City, like the same clubs that every other band had to play.
I believe they had a major record deal within 6 months of their first show.
Well, I didn't know if that's the case.
Yeah, that's not a band that cut their teeth.
All I know is that they were the kings of that scene. And they were respected by the other bands around them. I mean, they were the charge of that scene that at Interpol and, I read that book, Meet Me in the Bathroom. I forget who the hell else was in it. The Yeah Yeah Yeahs.
I like the Yeah Yeah
Yeahs. Were in that as well.
The Yeah Yeah Yeahs. The drummer looks just like John Wall.
He looks exactly like me.
I mean, if you look at it,
go to his strip club when the Yeah Yeah Yeahs are playing down the street and say you're in the Yeah Yeah Yeahs. Like when I told the girls in Kansas City that I was in Interpol. That's, yeah, just go, I'm the drummer from the Yeah Yeah Yeahs.
Yeah, look, John Wallach is their drummer.
it's weird. You're giving Wallach
I mean, it's uncanny how much he... Look, I mean, look, that's John Wallach.
Yeah, that does look a lot like John Wallach.
Exactly like me.
All right.
I mean, then there's like cool John Wallach.
that's what cool looks like?
In the bathroom, you know, okay. of the CBGB's John Wallach. There's no glasses John Wallach. There's Beard John Wallach. I mean, he's got a million different...
Have you ever had a beard, John? I know you've had a goatee.
I did. I had a beard when I was in college, yes.
All right. So, Bert, you saw the blowout of the Jets on Sunday, and then you've heard J.C. Jackson, his comments, I believe yesterday, saying how it wasn't that big a challenge, this L.A. Chargers team. Rich might be right. I mean, you saw the celebrations on the sideline with Josh McDaniels. There's a new tude going on here in New England of just let's start
positivity.
Speaking what's on our mind.
Yeah.
Like speaking what's on our mind and like, hey, like we're the best. Is this the new vibe coming out of New England?
I don't know. It's like, I think the Chargers are actually a beatable opponent.
Yes.
But I also think that going into the next three games, there's still, I think you'd argue the next three teams they play are teams they can beat, but probably have more talent on their rosters across the board in the Chargers, the Browns, and the Panthers. And I think that makes this like a pivotal stretch, which is probably part of why what you're talking about, Fred, is a piece of this, is Bill saying, like, I don't think confidence is an issue for us. I don't think you say that unless it at least was at some point, right?
Right.
Like, I don't think you go out of your way to say something
so
like that.
His so his strategy now is, like, let it kind of loose, let's get...
Well, I think to Bill's credit, he usually knows what his team needs, and he's got a pretty good feel for his locker room in most cases. And I think there was probably a point this year where he felt like the team needed confidence. And look, I said to you guys last week, right? Like, if you look at the makeup of the roster, I think there were some older guys who aren't the players that they once were, who are maybe having a harder time getting through to the younger guys, and your McCourties and your Hightowers and those sorts of guys, right? Van Noy. And then yeah. you have younger guys who I don't think were getting it quite fast enough. And so the best thing to me that came from the Jets game was that a lot of the newcomers delivered for you. Jonnu Smith made a couple of big plays. Hunter Henry's played better.
He's had like touchdowns in four straight games. Is that right?
Kendrick Bourne.
Yep.
So and then the big one is Mack. And so I think, you know, the fact that some of those guys are like stepping forward and taking lead roles is a big deal, because I think there was some question on whether or not the core of this team really got it the way, and we talked about this last week, really got it the way that the old, now that's going to be tested,
mm-hmm.
because it's a lot easier to be that way when you're up by 20,
yeah.
you know what I mean, than it is when you're, you know, in a dogfight on the other side of the country. So we'll see if it holds
well,
up.
Well, they were at a critical place, according to you, because yeah. I remember before that Jets game, yep. you were talking about how Devin McCourty had somewhat called out the team and
coaches, it was not delicate, and it felt to me, and I know it felt to some people there, like a little bit of a last resort, like a little bit of a I need to find a way to get through to these guys. And Devin, to his credit, I think is one of the best leaders that's come through here over the course of the last 20 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fact that he was willing to speak so candidly, I got a lot of people's attention. And I just think that the way I would describe like what I was trying to get through last week was there were some people new to the team that expected the Patriots operation to be one way. Then they got here and it was something else. And like the perception was that that was starting to show up on the field with, I think there was one big offensive play for an opponent that happened with 10 guys in the field earlier in the
yeah,
year, right?
Yeah, it was, yeah. Right? Saints game, maybe,
there have been some issues getting guys on and off the field. There have yep. been two block punts. There have been delay of game issues where either they've taken the penalty or had to call timeouts.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff you wouldn't normally see from the Patriots. And so, like, I think that there were questions. Is this as tight an operation as it once was? And mm-hmm. I think some people who were coming in from the outside who expected it to be one way didn't really see that.
Yeah.
And if the young guys are driving it now, that's exactly what they need. The new guys are driving it right now, that's exactly what they need. Because the McCourties and Hightowers, when you're not an all-pro player anymore,
mm-hmm.
it's a lot harder to get through to people. It's a lot, and especially when you're like of a different generation.
You know what's funny is who's an all-pro player or a Pro Bowl player on this team?
Oof. Oh, man, it's tough. Judon,
J.C. Jackson might be getting
anybody
there.
On the offensive or defensive lines?
No.
Because I can't tell.
No.
No. I mean, the one guy, the... No.
Judon.
Judon's your guy.
Judon's the one guy that stands
I mean,
out.
Judon's a de facto defensive
but
line.
You also
he's
have
a stand-up defensive line.
J.C. Jackson gets thrown out a ton, and we were having this discussion
J.C. Jackson has got a horseshoe up his ass. I mean, J.C. Jackson really does. I mean, in fact, if I had an intern, I would go, please make me a montage of every J.C. Jackson interception and how many of them have been deflected, how many of them have just fallen into his gut. Like, J.C. Jackson is very, very fortunate, at least half of those. And I'm quite confident in saying that because 75% of the time he gets an interception, I'm like, wow, well, that just fell right to him. Go ahead.
Okay, so that's the question, Bert. We were talking about Pro Bowl caliber or not. J.C. Jackson's pretty much going to get paid, I would think, next offseason. But opposing teams are not scared to throw at him. He isn't one of those guys that'll take away half the field. And yet he's your number one guy, and I assume this coming offseason will want to get paid that way. I don't think he's good enough, do you?
Well, they didn't come close to like there was discussions in the offseason about a long-term contract. And my understanding is the two sides were on different planets. Like, not close whatsoever.
Good for the Patriots.
And so J.C. Jackson's, like, approach now, I want to go get top dollar. Like, my feeling is he felt like he was a little undervalued. And so, and he feels like he should be paid like a top-end corner. And you know what? I mean, to his credit, like, he's put up numbers. I think he's played fairly well. And even if you view him as number two, right? At that position, if number twos make it to the market, they get paid by number ones. Like Byron Jones in Miami is a perfect example where he was okay.
Yeah.
He was good in Dallas. But like you get a guy who's got some talent who gets to the market at that position because like really good players rarely make it to the market at that position. And those guys always get overpaid. And so if J.C. Jackson makes it to the market, if they don't franchise him, someone's going to overpay.
All right. Speaking of all this moving around and money and things like that, there was an interesting side story that happened this week where Mark Ingram ended up getting traded away from the Texans, and that pissed off Brandon Cooks pretty bad. He made it well known. He put that out there on Twitter. Brandon Cooks would be someone who would be fairly relatively inexpensive to make a trade for. Do you see any kind of reunion between Brandon Cooks and the New England Patriots?
I checked in on that like last night because the Saints are another team that they've been sort of sniffing around on receivers now. They've obviously, I mean, who knows what's going to happen with Michael Thomas. Traquan Smith came back last week, and I think everybody saw the confrontations with Jameis on the sidelines. So they need some help.
Mm-hmm.
And they're another team where, like, that would make some sense. And New Orleans has done deals with Houston in the past. And so I checked in on Cooks. I don't think it's the Texans, despite what he said on Twitter, I don't think it's the Texans' intention to trade Brandon Cooks right now. So whether or not they do, we'll see. But I don't think that they intend to move him. If I were the Patriots, I would ask, definitely.
Now, what's the price on that? Like, because I've heard he's relatively cheap as far as that. How much would he be owed? It's not a ton, is it?
Like the money's not the factor.
It's a million and a half.
Okay, so that's nothing.
The money's not the factor.
But I was about to ask the other part of it too. Like, what do you think that they would ask for as far as any kind of picks or anything in return?
Well, because he's cheap, he's worth more.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing is, like, and so, like, that might be why Houston's being careful about, like, you know, we're not shopping him because
they want you to raise the...
They want you to raise the stakes. I mean, like, and you think about it, like, and he's a pretty good player. He's got a lot of good history. If Mohamed Sanu went for a two a couple of years ago, I mean, and this is a guy who, like, I mean, look, like, I think right now it's... 21 of the 32 teams have less than $5 million in cap space. So the value of a player with that sort of experience and that level of accomplishment at that price in this market
is huge.
Is big, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because like most, like a lot of the names you hear about, like Devontae Parker's another one. I have him in my trade column that's going up today.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it sounds good, like the idea, oh yeah, we could bring in Devontae Parker from Miami and he could really, like a big outside receiver. Costs a lot of money, and there aren't a lot of teams that can fit him in.
They can maneuver all that money around.
No, they can, but here's the thing, Fred. Like, there's like not a lot of cap space this year. The cap went down, so what teams had budgeted for this year, it's like a traffic jam of
contracts. All right, so anyway, so Rich asked, what would it take to get Cooks? Be very careful. Select your words carefully, Bert.
Would you do a three for him?
You're on the record.
I think a three for Brandon Cooks for, would be
to rental
acceptable.
Brandon, to rental?
It's not a rental. I mean, he's under contract. The problem is he's expensive next year. I think I got to look that up. But
the Patriots.
So it's like the Patriots should not be in the business.
He's not a rental.
But if you want to keep him next year, he doesn't have guaranteed money.
Okay,
next year, but you have control.
So it's essentially a rental. No, I would not.
So Cooks this year, So his base salary this year 2.5. So. The remainder of that, right? And then next year's the last year of his contract, 12.5.
No.
Well, you'll know more at the trade deadline,
too. That's the thing, is you're not going to keep
him. Yeah, you're not going to keep him. So, no, for this team shouldn't be in the business of renting guys for third-round picks.
But good for Houston, selling off. They should be.
They should be.
They should be selling everyone they can possibly sell off. I'm sure Brandon Cooks is pissed, but you get anything for Mark Ingram, you do it.
If the Patriots look like everything the Texans do right now should be about building draft capital.
Yes.
If the Patriots win on Sunday, do you think that they would put a little bit more thought into using a third round pick to get Brandon Cooks? Because the trade deadline's next week, right?
I'm the Patriots,
you're not winning the Super Bowl.
It's probably not the best idea, but do you think they would do it?
I mean, like the only reason I would do it is because maybe I think it's good for my young quarterback, right? Like that's the only reason I would do it is like I might think
you spent a lot of money protecting that kid.
No, I know, but I'm saying like if it's about like developing the young guy and making the young guy more comfortable, maybe you think about it. But I still see like significant holes in the roster. They're going to be losing guys in the offseason, right? Like, so if JC Jackson's gone, you are up a creek at corner.
You can't be. Right? They're not in a position to be giving up third round picks for rental players.
Your offensive line, like you just have so many spots that I still think you need to fill with young players if the rebuild is going to work. And I don't think they're at a point right now where you're giving away draft picks to rent guys from other teams.
All right, when we get back, Fred, I do want to ask Bert about how Martellus Bennett talked trash on Jimmy Garoppolo. Basically called him, I think he called him a puss.
He called him a bitch.
Yeah, that's what it was.
I was going to say, like, can we use that word?
On this show, you can use anything.
Go nuts.
We're outrageous.
Well, it's syndicated now, so.
Sure, that's right. It's all over the place.
You don't want to piss off the people of North Conway.
So I want your opinion on, from what you know about when Jimmy Garoppolo was there, how accurate an assessment that was by Martellus Bennett.
Whether or not strong, like, yeah, I mean, he doesn't hold back either.
No.
So, yeah.
And I want to know if behind the scenes that was either the belief from the players or something that maybe you saw a hint of while he was here.
All right. Good stuff. We will have that with Bert. Here are the headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Now. It's like they're all on laughing gas.
It's Tusher and Rich.
Slow.
Yeah, everything's in slow motion.
On Boston's home for sports.
These are the kind of people that take snoozes under trees.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Bro, we lost two games. One of them was because Jimmy Garoppolo was being a bitch and tried to quit before us on the last, decided not to play right before the game. So we went out there. Jacoby came out and played with a up thumb and played his heart out. But Jimmy was just being a bitch about it all. And he's still being it. Like, that's why you can't win with a bitch for a quarterback, first of all. So, like, that was the whole thing with him. He didn't want to come out and, like, do anything because his agent was trying to protect his body or some like that, which I can't fault him for that. But, like, you should have made that decision on Thursday, not on Sunday. You know what I'm saying?
You can't fault him for that.
But I'll rip him for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, he's a bitch, but you can't fault him, right?
Well, it's not like he misspoke either. He called him a bitch, like, three different times.
Yes.
Just in case you missed it.
Yeah. You know. All right, we're Toucher and Rich. Bert Breer from MMQB is in studio. So as Rich was saying, was that the sentiment around the Patriots at the time?
I mean, I don't know that anybody was using that sort of language to describe him, but I think there were definitely questions about how hard he'd push through the injuries. And, yeah, I think really more than anything else, it was about, dude, this is your big chance. Like, he had the four games, you know, where Brady was suspended. This is your big shot to show us who you are. And I think to some degree, you know, maybe Bill was hoping that like Jimmy would just knock it out of the park and then he could move on from Brady after that.
Sure.
Year. Because remember, that was the beginning of the 16 season and 17 was the last year of Garoppolo's contract. And I believe at the time, maybe also the last year of Brady's contract. So like there were a lot of things kind of at work there, but the bottom line is there was a lot on the line for Jimmy Garoppolo, and I think it's the same frustration the Niners have had, to be honest with you, is that he can't stay on the field. And you even see some of it. I don't know how close you guys have been following what's happening in San Francisco there, but how Jimmy and Kyle are sort of contradicting each other on the injury.
Yep.
And Kyle's calling it a bruise, and Jimmy called it a sprain or a tear. I can't, like, whatever it was. The way they're describing and couching the injury is a little different, where Kyle's making it sound a little less severe and Jimmy's making it sound a little more severe.
So he has a reputation of being someone who doesn't play through injuries of people would.
I mean, it's like, do you push through it? You know, because that's how, I mean, honestly, like, and I can remember, you know, I remember talking to Brady about this, is like, there's only one, like, other players at other positions can show their toughness in so many different ways. There's really one way for a quarterback to show his toughness: availability. That's it. It's not running into somebody. It's not how hard you can hit somebody. It's not. It's availability. It's, do you get up from the hit and walk back to the huddle? It's, when you're hurt, do you push through it? Mm-hmm. Like, it's really the only way that a quarterback can show his toughness, because in so many different ways they're treated with kid gloves, right?
Yeah.
In so many different ways they're treated separately and not really the same way other football players are. And so, like, the way that they can kind of show themselves to be one of the guys is that no matter what happens, you're in that huddle.
Now, remind me, was that an injury that he could have played through? I'm trying to remember.
He got spiked on his shoulder. Miami. Which linebacker was it that spiked him? Like, well, drove him into the ground. But whatever. It was against Miami. Yeah. He landed on the right shoulder, and apparently at the time it was separated.
Right, and where he would have had a four-game. But it was like an AC joint sprain,
Yes, that's right.
Which, like, if you remember, and I can't remember an important detail. I can't remember if it was the throwing shoulder or the non-throwing shoulder. It might have been.
I thought it was the throwing shoulder.
Okay.
Well, whatever it was, it's an injury that apparently Martellus Bennett and other guys in the team thought he could have played through.
So Brady played with a separated shoulder during, like, the last 2.5 months of the Super Bowl season of 11, when they lost to the Giants the second time.
Mm-hmm.
Last 2.5 months of that season. But I think it was the non-throwing shoulder. But everybody on the team knew it. He was wearing a harness.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
right.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I think that there's that sort of, there were those questions where it's, like, he had so much personally on the line in that situation, and, like, he had an opportunity there. Like, if there was ever going to be an opportunity to show, like, I can be the next guy here, that was it. And he had four games to prove it, and he only played in a game and a half.
Yeah. Well, so what you're
saying. So I don't think that question's lingered for Jimmy. And, I mean, to be fair to Jimmy, injuries are injuries, right? And, you know.
And, like, he ended up getting paid.
And, like, we don't, like, he's the only one who knows. You know what I mean? Like, there's also the point where if, like, you go out there, you're hurting the team.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you can't perform, and that could have been it, too. So I think we have to be fair to Jimmy here. It's not his fault he keeps getting hurt. But, I mean, the reality is it cost him in that spot with his teammates and, you know, obviously with the Patriots. And now with the Niners, it's going to wind up costing his inability to stay on the field is going to wind up eventually costing him his job, whether it's later this year or next year.
How often does that matter? How often do players call out other players for not, like, behind the scenes?
Oh, I think they all pay attention to, like, who's pushing through.
Yeah. Especially when they're playing with injuries.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, the whole thing is, like, there's no, and I don't want to be corny about it, but there's no greater team sport than football. There's no sport where people are reliant on one another more than football. I mean, you're trusting your health to the people around you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and, you know, at the same time, you're also, like, you're relying on them from, like, a tactical standpoint and everything too. So me getting paid, if I'm your teammates, me getting paid, like, rides on how you play and you play and you play also, right?
Yeah.
So there's that part of it for, like, where so much of your respect is built up on what are you pushing through, how tough are you, and guys 100% pay attention to that. They know who the tough guys are in every locker room. They know who the guys are who won't push through. Guys build reputations that way, good and bad.
Well, I mean, look at Mac Jones and how I think he's kind of earned the respect of the locker room already.
What David Andrews said, I thought was significant. Yeah.
Okay, well, just remind people, because I know that they seem to think, they're seeing him get hit.
Unprompted, David Andrews, this was after, which game was that?
Probably the Tampa Bay game. No, what was the game he got nailed?
Dallas,
that's right.
He said number 10's a tough son of a gun. And he said it like unprompted on his own after a game. And that's the best thing a quarterback can have a teammate say about him. And I also think that you just don't see, it's not just the physical toughness, it's the mental toughness too. I actually thought, like, now, I don't think the throw to Kendrick Bourne at the end of that game to take the lead, I think if Dallas had played that a little bit differently, maybe it gets picked off. Mm-hmm. KZ took a really bad angle, and that's what sort of created that play. It wasn't the world's greatest throw. But I think, like, the fact that he was willing to make, that was his next throw after the pick six.
Yeah.
Showed mental toughness. Showed, I'm going to keep swinging.
And it's weird, too. It's like, he said something the other day that, you know, because he's so mellow, it doesn't sound, in print, it looked like a hard-o quote, but because he's just so mellow and laid back, it didn't come across that way. And that was when he was asked about being hit, and he goes, you know, I like being hit. You know, like, he actually talked about how he likes being hit.
Well, there were stories from, Alabama, too, of, like, how when he was in the scout team, when he was Tua's backup, how he would, like, jaw with Saban. You know what I mean? Like, when he's running the scout team against Saban's defense. So he's had a reputation of being, like, sort of that. And I think Brady was that way, too. And I don't want to compare him to Brady again. But Brady was sort of that way, too, where
he loves getting hit.
Where he had that, like the nice guy persona. But then you listen to what people say about how he conducts himself on the field, and it's a different guy.
Sure.
Well, Brady came out and said on the award-winning Jim Gray podcast.
The Let's Go podcast?
Let's go!
Yeah!
Let's go! Every time I see
Brady and Scratchy?
Yeah, that's right, Scratchy. He was always scratching. Nicholson used to say that because they hung out. He said that his favorite football moment was the Super Bowl against Seattle.
Yep.
Yes.
Saw that.
Mm-hmm. He said that was his, and that's the kind of stuff you're going to get from the Let's Go podcast, which is going to last forever.
Which is why it's number one on all the charts now.
Well, you could ask Tom Brady every day, what's your favorite moment in sports? What was your favorite moment in sports? You can just do that over and over and over again, and it will never get old. All right, Bert, so you like the Patriots this weekend?
I think I can't remember if I picked the Chargers or the Patriots, to be quite honest with you, so I don't want to go back on whatever I picked. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there's an opportunity here. Their run defense, the Chargers' run defense, has issues, and I think that's become a strength of the Patriots. So this could be a big Damian Harris game. You also get the benefit, if you're leaning on your running game, of shortening the game, which means they get less possessions. I also think the Ravens a couple weeks ago might have drawn a little bit of a blueprint for you in that the Ravens saw flaws in their protection rules, and this is getting really into the weeds with the football stuff, but they found flaws in the protection rules, which allowed them to get free rushers at Herbert, and they felt like if they could get free runners at Herbert, it would speed them up, and it would turn them into a different player. And so they paired that with, we're going to throw the kitchen sink at Williams and Allen and just try to erase them from the game, speed them up, and make them go to Cook, to Eckler, and we're going to see if he can do it. And they wound up messing with him pretty good. And so I add the way the Ravens were able to play Herbert, and I think the world of Justin Herbert. I'd probably take him maybe over any young quarterback in the league right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I add the way the Ravens were able to play him with how well the Patriots played him last year, and I think there's an opportunity.
That's what people are saying, is that if you're a veteran coach, you can confuse him. That he is still young enough.
And I think he'll get there. But I think that there's still some things.
It's such a difficult position to play. Of course, yeah. I mean, it takes years and years and years to master. Of course, I mean, it can take a career to get to mastery of it.
But I do feel like this is a critical 3-game stretch, because you're playing 3 teams, 2 of them in the AFC, 2 of them that you could be competing with for wild card spots. That again, I think have more talented rosters than you. But I think you're capable of beating them in Cleveland, Carolina, and this week the Chargers.
All right. Well, Carolina is a mess.
They're a mess right now, yeah. Sammy D, it's Fred, your guy's hasn't had the sort of October that he had in September.
No, Sammy D isn't the all-pro everyone was anointing him as, even though he didn't play that well in week one either, but people were anointing him as a all-pro. That is not the case. And
I think it's probably has a lot to do with the fact that that running back's really, really good. In September, he was playing, and in October, he hasn't.
Well, they play him way too much is the problem. I mean, they give him the ball 99% of the – I mean, there's the human body's not meant to withstand.
Especially
that
with
of...
the human body's only 205 pounds in this case.
Exactly. All right, Bert Breer, you can read him in the MMQB.
Make sure it's Bert Breer you're reading from the MMQB. Yeah. Because something written by other people may not reflect the opinion of Bert Breer.
There's no money left.
That's the line of the hour.
Now I feel bad that I reacted the way I did. You know?
No, you can call out, but that was not my opinion.
I mean,
of course not.
No, but the
because
fact
you're
you
a
said,
rational thinking
yeah.
human being.
Yeah, no, but Bert, I didn't write but that. Bert soaks up all the money.
I mean, I don't think like Carson Palmer. I don't think Carson Palmer's going on Dan Patrick with those sorts of intentions.
Sure.
Right. Carson Palmer lives in like a freaking like in a cabin in Idaho right now and doesn't pay attention to football at all.
Well, I'm sure USC wants it that way now.
It's a very nice cabin.
All right, Bert Breer, thank you. When we come back, it is the eve of Hallows, and that means that we will relive what has become a tradition on the Toucher and Rich Show. We'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.